That's the sound of Stangee. He's calling for his lady, Keita, who's just outside his paddock at Madowakay Farm in Ottawa. The bonded pair of horses are a very special breed, one that is making a comeback from the brink of extinction. Danse, Anine, Bouju, hello, welcome, and howdy. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild.
These horses, they just really have, you know, something different about them. They have a different feel. They are most definitely sacred animals.
Let me tell you a story. A story about a small horse that lived alongside Indigenous peoples here on Turtle Island. You might believe that Europeans brought horses first, when in fact, they've been here much, much longer. The Ojibwe spirit horse is also known as the Lac La Croix pony. These horses were used to check trap lines, haul goods, and move camp. They were hardy, smart, and friendly. Their shaggy manes and hairy ears protected them from the freezing winter and bugs in the summer. But Europeans were not impressed with these little ponies. As farmland grew, the horses' territory shrunk. Government officials said they were too small to be useful for anything. Health officials accused them of dirtying the water. And missionaries did not want the wild horses breeding near children. So, they were killed off. Their numbers dwindled. By 1977, only 4 mares were left. Seeing their beloved horses being slaughtered, a group of Anishinaabe men took action. They were whisked from their home near Lac La Croix First Nation in northwestern Ontario to Minnesota in the United States. There, the horses were bred with a Spanish Mustang, giving them a fighting chance at survival. Meanwhile, those that loved and lived with these little animals believed they'd never see them again. Today on Radio Indigenous, the return of the Ojibwe spirit horse.
It was a very special moment, let me tell you, that day when we brought that herd of horses to the powwow.
And the people making sure they are never again forgotten.
I promised I would take care of these ponies. I still have to. It's my job.
When we started asking around about the Ojibwe spirit horse, everyone pointed us in the same direction. Rhonda Snow has dedicated most of her life to recovering and reclaiming the spirit horse and making sure the little ponies thrive. Rhonda was a shy little girl growing up in Fort Frances, Ontario, in the 1970s, when she heard stories about these wild little horses that roamed free like the deer.
I was sitting on a staircase waiting for my girlfriend to come out and play. And when I heard the elders and the loggers who were having coffee on the weekend at this house, they talked about them. And they talked about how tough they were because they were full-spirited. They weren't gelded and they weren't forced. And that's what makes them so strong. For example, if a horse is forced with bits, spurs, or an agenda of a human, the person that's in control is pushing some of that spirit out and pushing their spirit in. So full spirit horses to be there for us spiritually and to be our leaders and help us need to be free.
Their story captivated a little Rhonda, and she never forgot about the tiny horses with giant spirits. Then as an adult, Rhonda heard about a group called Rare Breeds Canada who found some of these horses. Remarkably, they were direct descendants of the last 4 mares taken to the States back in 1977. Rhonda knew what she had to do, bring them home.
And so when I finally gathered up whatever money I could get, I went and found them where Rare Breeds said they were in Minnesota. And when I saw them, I thought they were so beautiful. And nobody could understand why I I wanted to bring them back to the area. And even when I did, they were mostly all forgotten. And many people tried to tell me that it was useless and I didn't, have the right idea in my mind about them always being here. But I never forgot the elder stories. And even when I went to see highly educated people or people from the museums, they told me no. But I didn't care because I knew that they were always here.
Rhonda combed through government archives, spoke to academics and historians, and traveled to reserves across Canada and the U.S. to document elders' memories of these special little horses.
I talked to Dr. Guth Cochran, and I asked him if he thought that they could have survived the Ice Age. And he said, very well, pockets could have remained and survived around the Great Lakes area. Then I also saw in the archives that when the explorers came, they looked like shaggy, bigger dogs. And then I did a radio interview with the late Larry Aiken, a very well-known historian and belongs to the Madewin. He spoke about them in the birch bark squirrels since the late 13 to 1400s. People didn't believe it. People would say how disappointing they were, or they're just ponies. And it took so many years and decades before people believed it. I thought they were the most beautiful, but unfortunately, I had to prove their strength. And so one winter after I got them all, I spent time with them in the barn. And in the spring, and the OPP brought a caravan full of kids from at-risk youth from Northwestern Ontario. And those little ponies, I never broke them. I let them be what they were. And people would say to me, you didn't break them. And I said, I didn't have to. You just have to treat them fair. And after that, even all the OPP officers jumped on them and went for rides on beautiful trails in the bush that I cut just with a hand whippersnipper and a push lawnmower. I think it was 7 kilometers of trails, but all kinds of people came and enjoyed them.
Today, the Ojibwe spirit horse is endangered, but Rhonda's work has helped bring the breed back from the brink of extinction.
They need a place, they need a preserve, just like a buffalo preserve, and let them be free again, and they can be full spirit ponies once more. When I picked up those wild ponies in Minnesota, and I promised I would take care of these ponies, I still have to. And until they get a preserve and are have herds and free again, it's my job.
Rhonda Snow is an Anishinaabe and Métis artist and Ojibwe spirit horse knowledge keeper. She lives in Fort Frances, Ontario. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Coming up later in the show, you'll meet some people who are so inspired by the Ojibwe spirit horse story, they took up the reins to save the breed. Taking us there, here's a song about hope and resilience going out to all the seeds out there. This is Julian Taylor.
Now here you are, your info flower. You're flexible in all your power. You got all the sunlight in the air that you need. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. Now here you stand, hour after hour, strong as an oak, tall as a tower. The storm keeps raging, but you never pay no heed. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. Somehow, everything eventually dreams. Someday, somehow, everyone eventually dreams. Someday. I see you shining strong and clear. No one can stop a good idea. Nobody like you. There's nobody like you. I was a flower, I was an oak. I was provoked, and when I awoke, I started grazing for all the things that I need. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. Somehow, everything eventually dreams. Someday, somehow, everyone eventually dreams. Someday. They knocked you down, erased your name. You stood your ground and wouldn't change. You found your place now, standing alongside the trees. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. You are a star and you are hope. Smoke signals in the air evoke. From the darkest depths that our hearts can be free. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. They tried to bury us, but they didn't know we were seeds. Somehow, everything eventually dreams. Someday. Somehow, everyone eventually dreams. Someday, somehow, everything eventually dreams. Someday, somehow, everyone eventually dreams. Someday.
From his album Beyond the Reservoir, that's Julian Taylor with Seeds. The singer-songwriter has Black Mohawk and West Indian roots. About a 16-hour drive southeast of Rhonda Snow's farm, Ojibwe spirit horses have found a new home. Midowake Farm is an indigenous tourism and gathering space in Ottawa. Midowake means share the land in Anishinaabemowin.
Hey, buddy.
And that's where Unreserved producer Laura Bone-Stubing met up with Stangi, Keita, Sweetgrass, Cedar, and Trina Mather-Simard, the site's executive director.
Hi, boys.
I can't believe that one.
Yes. Hey, Bakwa.
So this here is the young guy. So we got him as a yearling, and we did, they are all registered and DNA tested and that with the Ojibwe Spirit Horse Society. They have a distinct DNA. So now our elders' oral histories are corroborated with science. So we had really asked them, you know, about his background and DNA and if he was a good fit to be a stallion or stud on the farm here. And so we have kept him intact. They thought he had great lineage that was kind of missing, and he's a good fit, not too closely related to our mares. And he'll be our little stallion here. This is Migazy Eagle. There you go, buddy. He's got all of the breed markers that you're really looking for in the Ojibwe Spirit Horse. He's got the stripes down his legs, like kind of prehistoric tiger type stripes down his legs. He's got a really strong dorsal stripe that goes down his back. And even in the summer, you can see the ears are full of the extra hair to protect them in the Canadian winters. And they actually have an extra nose flap to help protect in the winters as well. The first four Ojibwe spirit horses here at Madooke Farm, they really inspired us to, you know, take on this opportunity and build this farm. I'm Ojibwe myself, and my daughters are longtime equestrians. And even then, I had never heard of the Ojibwe spirit horse. It was only a couple years ago that I had heard an interview with artist Rhonda Snow, and she was talking about these horses. And I think my mind was just blown that, you know, they existed and they were so connected to our community and our culture. And yet so few people, myself included, knew about them. I'm a member of Curve Lake First Nation around Peterborough. And yes, I actually called my aunt, who, you know, holds quite a lot of the traditional knowledge of our community. And I was like, I've never heard of this. Do you know of this? And she was like, yeah, we have, you know, we hold ceremonies for the horse. And we were really inspired by their story, and we just knew that they had to be part of, you know, how we were teaching Canadians about our culture and our resilience. And so we brought some horses back to Ottawa and started looking for a farm opportunity, and we landed here at Madooke Farm. So this is Sweetgrass, the mare that's coming to us here, and the young foal is Cedar. Sweetgrass came from TJ Stables down in Chatham area, and she came to us pregnant. We weren't expecting the baby until August, so she was a surprise. April 27th, our staff had left for the day from the barn for their morning chores, and our store staff came in and called and said, oh, when did baby come? And we're like, apparently in the last hour. So she was a bit of a surprise, you know, and I think that the mare just, you know, likes to do it alone out in the wild. And so we had a beautiful, healthy young filly, our first born on the farm here. She is just the, you know, most curious, friendly colt. My daughters will go in and sit down in the paddock, and she'll actually lay over you and put her head on your chest. And it is the most adorable thing. She's just a really sweet, and she's,
like a
you
dog.
Know. Yeah, she's like a big, curious, friendly puppy dog. We're fortunate here with 164 acres, so we have a very large farm, you know, and we try and keep things as natural as possible to support this breed. You know, things like keeping our stallion in with a mare and little family, as opposed to, you know, often they're kept on their own. But actually, one thing that we're working on that I think is really exciting, it's something called Paradise Paddocks. We have two of our older Ojibwe spirit horses in the front here, Kita and Stanji, who both have some laminitic issues. So that's from being overweight, kind of like diabetes, in terms of they're not processing the sugars and they get sore hooves and things. You know, Kita came from Alberta, and it's a real issue that they have with the horses there because the grasses are so much richer. They're high in sugar, so it's not really that great for the horses. And it can stem from, you know, when you put the hay down, the horses will kind of stand and eat all day, or, you know, they're not moving and active. So this new style of paddock that we're building here in the back, they're actually built to have the horses move and be more natural like they would in the wild. So that first paddock that we're building here, it's basically like a track that's going around our paddock. And then you add natural obstacles, so things that they're, you know, stepping over, like logs and stones. And when we actually created the small sample here, they were using the stones to do their hooves and, you know, sand areas that you create to roll. So yeah, we're very excited to kind of add that element here. And long term, we're looking at adding one into the forest here, so it's an even more natural environment that these ponies will at least be able to spend some of their days on a track that runs through the forest and that gives them all of those natural elements where they're moving and grazing and moving as much as they would in the wild. I have to say, I mean, as soon as we met them, I just saw so much similarity in, you know, I think all of the discussions that are around reconciliation and kind of the resilience of our culture surviving, you know. And when we met them, I just thought they're going to share such an important story for Canadians, and it's so important for me to see this breed continue, and for, you know, as many Canadians and visitors as possible just to know about them and to have a better understanding of our, you know, connection to animals like these horses. They just really have a, you know, something different about them. They have a different feel. They are, you know, most definitely sacred animals. And, you know, even though they didn't have a ton of human interaction, you know, or a lot of handling when we got them, they, you know, so quickly built a bond and were able to trust. They're often used for equine-assisted learning programs, which is actually something we're creating here as well. So equine-assisted learning is like a nationally recognized kind of like mental health support, healing and wellness type program that uses horses as teachers. So we've worked on indigenizing the content. So we're doing the 7 grandfather teachings reflected each week in the interactions with the horses. So you're looking at nonverbal communication with the horses, you know, setting personal boundaries, and, you know, all of just these beautiful teachings that the horses can share with us about, like, love and respect. The word caretaker, I just think it really reflects, you know, our role and, you know, that respect for the sacredness of these horses. So not seeing them as property that we're using for something, but more, you know, that sign of respect for their gifts and that reciprocal kind of relationship and partnership. So our role, you know, is to do the best for them and create as natural, you know, of a life and space, to respect them and teach our participants about that, you know, that role and that connection.
Drina Mather-Simard is the Executive Director of Indigenous Experiences in Ottawa, which runs Madoa Cay Farm. If you want to feast your eyes on sweetgrass, baby cedar, and some of the other Ojibwe spirit horses, head to our website at cbc.ca/unreserved. You're listening to Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, the return of the Ojibwe spirit horse. Later this hour, you'll hear how the spirit horses at Great Raven Ranch in Seine River are helping young people find their inner strength.
And this girl is very timid. She would just stand there and, I can't do this, I don't know. And you can see the confidence level was really low, and there was also fear. So I told her, it's just a big dog. You know, it's like working with your dog at home. He's more scared of you than you are of him, but he's looking to you as a leader to try and see if you can give him some direction. So we'll try the lunging part. And it took about 2-3 hours in the day to actually do all of this stuff, teach her the basic safeties of leading a horse, working with the horse, saying hello to the horse, and having a general understanding of the horse. And basically, by the time she was done, within an hour, she was lunging the horse. Now I said, now we're going to try the hooking technique, where you're just basically going to ignore the horse and see how the horse comes to you, to see how well you're lunging the horse. And I taught her the basics of that, and she did the proper lunge to the horse, right? And then the horse came and rested her, after she sat around not facing the horse came and rested the snout on her shoulder. Hey, are we done lunging it? It literally blew her away, and even grandma and mom were just like, and you see the brightness and the confidence level that was shining in her eyes after that.
Darcy Whitecrow and his partner Kimberly Campbell run Grey Raven Ranch. You'll hear more from them a little later on the show. Picture a grassy field under a wide open Manitoba sky. That's what home looks like for the Ojibwe spirit horses that live on Ken McDonald's farm.
Old MacDonald had a farm.
E-I-E-I-O.
No, not that MacDonald. Ken loves these horses, and he wants more people to share that love. When he's not caring for his ponies, Ken plays French horn for the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra. Music is his language. So Ken and his friend, Rhonda Snow, teamed up with Cree composer Andrew Balfour and Anishinaabe hand drummer Jody Conton. And together, they found a new way to tell the story of the spirit horse.
It all just kind of folded into a show, and Canada Council supported us, the Festival of Sound supported the idea, and then Winnipeg Symphony was also very daring to just say, I went into the office, because I work there, I play in the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra, and I just said, I'd like to put on a show about these horses. And they just said, okay, when would you like to do that? And it was really, I was surprised at how they just jumped on it.
The result was an orchestral production called The Spirit Horse Returns. The show brings together orchestral music, Jody's hand drumming and singing, and Rhonda's artwork to tell their story and how close the breed came to vanishing forever.
Yeah, it was a real combination of skill sets required, and most of it was about listening to the stories that come in. My husband Trevor and I are both on the board of the Ojibwe Horse Society, and we have basically a number of file boxes sitting here of original letters and papers and such related to the horses that were preserved of the Ojibwe horse breed. And so going through those records and then talking with knowledge keepers of the breed, especially Rhonda Snow, we looked at the stories that were there and just said which are going to be the most evocative for kids. And our consulting elders, Allison Cox, Dan Thomas, originally was an elder in our area, carefully looked through the script and let us know, like, you know, this is too much, or this you can go into more, or, you know, this is particular to this area. There were so many incredible suggestions they made as to how we could best present it to young audiences, so we don't re-traumatize people with the information, and we keep it as an enjoyable story, although it goes into a dark place and the horses are nearly destroyed. There is this powerful message of a resurgence.
Jody Conton is part of the team that brought The Spirit Horse Returns to the stage in Winnipeg this year. She plays the role of an Indigenous woman, teaching an unknowing settler, played by Ken MacDonald, about the Ojibwe spirit horses. Jody explains how her community of Wasauksing First Nation lived and worked with them many years ago. Jody, welcome to Unreserved.
Connie Bojo, thank you.
So what did you know about the Ojibwe horses when you were growing up?
Well, I didn't know too much about them when I was growing up. Actually, I do know we had horses. My mom would tell me stories of how my grandmother would send the horses out to get my grandfather for dinner time, and the horses would take the wagon and go pick him up and bring him home. And the horses would come to the window when it was time to leave in the morning, that sort of thing. A few of our elders would share some stories and how what now is the Wasauksing ball field would be where all the horses would roam about 50 years ago. So that was, we did have quite a few elders come and approach and share some of their stories about how they would go down and just jump on the horses bareback with nothing on and ride them around the community.
And when did you start to learn about them?
Well, it's an ironic thing, you know, how I started to learn about the horses. When I became a part of Sounding Thunder, which is another production I'm in of the story of Francis Pegamagabo, the executive director of the Festival of the Sound approached me about working in a course that they do within our school district for music scores. So you go and you take your instruments into the classroom and you share about what you do. So he asked me to go in and talk about my hand drum, and that I would be partnered up with this person who plays the French horn. And it happened to be Ken McDonald. And so bringing the French horn and the hand drum together, quite the task.
Mm-hmm.
and so during this time, we were having conversations and I was getting to know Ken on a personal level. And I found out that him and his partner are a part of the Ojibwe Horse Society. And he began to explain to me what he does. It was a lot of me going out and learning from Ken and Trevor and their family and their Indigenous counterparts in Winnipeg, and them exposing me to that. And then I just found a natural innate love for it. When their story was shared to me by Rhonda Snow, because she actually had a herd of her own, and that's another person in our production, and she does all the amazing artwork. That's when I also became truly connected, because when I met my first Ojibwe spirit horse, it was something I cannot explain how I felt when I was around the horses, and that instant love, that unconditional love they give you, and that instant connection to spirit.
And how long ago did you first meet the Ojibwe spirit horses, and what was that like? Can you take me to that moment?
Absolutely. We're a part of the Gitchitewing Storytellers Festival in 2018. And at that time I was the Shawanaga First Nation cultural coordinator. And Ken and I were asked to share the story about the Ojibwe horses at that place. So it just so happens that Ken knew Terry Jenkins, who has about a herd of 14 in Chatham, Ontario. And he said, get a hold of Terry. Maybe she'll bring a couple of the horses. So I contacted Terry and I made it work for my employer that they would donate Terry's horses and their time to the Gitchitewin Festival. So I was able to get them sponsored to come. And the night the horses arrived at the Stocky Center in Parry Sound, I believe it was Tatanka who came out first. He was the littlest pony there. He came out first, and literally the second his hoof hit the ground, I felt it inside.
What did you feel inside?
I felt like it was this energy. It just popped into me. The second he connected with me instantly. And it was this feeling of fullness. And it was all this emotion came over me. And my children, my three sons, were there too. And it was like at 10 o'clock at night when they arrived. And we were all standing there. And we were all just so emotionally overwhelmed with the beauty of them as they came off the trailer. And we were able to spend time with them, and we walked them down the fitness trail downtown, like down Parry Sound, and we walked two horses like you walk your dogs. And it was so awesome to be able to lead them down the fitness trail after being away from this area for over 50 years.
Now, I understand one of Ken's horses inspired one of your songs. Tell me about that horse and how the song came about.
Well, that's when we were at Music Scores, Ken was telling me about Sam McQuay, and told me about her name and how she got the name by an Indigenous person he knows out in Winnipeg. I think it was 2 years ago, my cousin and I had been going out to Saskatchewan, and we made a special stop in at Ken's farm to meet Sam McQuay. And Ken said, let's go out to the field and see if the horses will come to you. And they took me out to the middle of the field, and I started hand drumming and singing. And all of a sudden, three horses are running at me at full throttle. Like, I thought they were going to run me over. And they came right to me. And Assamaquay was the first one to come to me. And I put my hand on her forehead immediately. And it was like, I just started crying. I'm getting emotional talking about it because I can just feel her beautiful love and her energy, that healing energy that resonates within those horses as they came to me. And I had already written the song about Assamaquay, but when I connected with her, I was so proud that I was able to make that song for her because everything that I was feeling in that song rang true when I touched her.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you had brought some Ojibwe spirit horses to your home community. Is that correct?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We got Terry to come again, and it was so awesome. Because the community was able to come out, meet the horses, stand with them, pet them. It was just a beautiful day.
What did it feel like for you to have these horses in Wasoxing after 50 years connecting and interacting with kids and elders?
I'm still pitching myself, to be honest. Like, I mean, I never even thought that would ever occur. You know, if you had asked me that question 20 years ago, I wouldn't even know what you're talking about. But today, like when it happened, I felt like I brought them home. And we brought them home and we did a good job and we're sharing their story and in hopes that other Indigenous people feel that they can share their story. You know, we're sharing a story of our Ojibwe spirit horses. Their lineage is proven and there's blood DNA to prove that. A lot of our people don't know about it because they were killed off. Like people, you know, took them out basically. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those things are really are common in our Indigenous world. And so it really is cool to share the story in that way, because it's also quite similar to our history.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Spirit Horse Returned. What is the character that you play?
Well, I am Rhonda Snow's friend who has horses. And I'm an Indigenous person, and I actually take Ken on a spirit journey across Turtle Island to different places to visit different horses and to share different stories. That's what it is. Yeah. So Ken had said, Jody, would you mind narrating a few lines? And I'm like, yeah, I can do narration because I don't mind narrating a little bit. And I'm like, a few lines is good. 125 lines later,
give or take.
I did it.
And so who is the Spirit Horse Returns for? Who do you hope sees this play?
I want everybody to see this play. People who are trying to figure out or have an understanding of First Nations people are part of our history. Indigenous people themselves who are trying to reconnect, whether they're 60 scoopers, whether they're part of a system, this gives them a conduit to start to learn those things in a safe space. And I know a lot of our people are lost and they're trying to figure out who they are, where they belong, their identity for mass reasons. And this is kind of one of those things that will bridge that gap for them and help them have an understanding so they can begin their own journey with finding out who they are, where they belong, and what they need to do in this life.
Yeah. When you were creating the Spirit Horse Returns, what were you thinking about when you wrote the music and the lyrics?
I was thinking of the Creator, because these beautiful beings came from that beautiful place, that just like we did. And that reminder that we need to respect all life, no matter what it is, whether it's an ant, whether it's an Ojibwe horse, or whether it's a human being. We all need to be respected and we all need to show that respect. I believe that when I write from my heart, from that most beautiful place, I allow it to flow and I don't resist, and it turns out beautiful.
What do you think is about music and theater that helps deliver these tough truths around colonization and racism?
I think that the music connects us all. I think that music is healing. My second Ojibwe name is the one who heals through songs. And when I sing, it's with the intention of healing for all who hear my music. And it's with that grand intention that beautiful sound resonate with each person, whether they know the language I'm singing or not.
Yeah.
And when we sing from that place, the hair will rise up on the back of our necks, on our arms, for validation that this is done from a good place. And that's really what I go in when I'm doing music. That's what I have to focus on.
Well, Jody, thank you for bringing a little bit of that beauty into the world.
Oh, Miigwech, I appreciate your time.
Jody Conton is an Anishinaabe hand drummer and singer from Wasoxing First Nation. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, the little Ojibwe spirit horse that could, thanks to the help of many kind human companions. Kind humans like Darcy Whitecrow. He remembers when tiny horses roamed free in his community of Seine River First Nation. And he remembers when they disappeared about 50 years ago. He and his partner Kimberly Campbell brought the horses back to Seine River and opened Grey Raven Ranch. There they run a program for youth that shows Ojibwe spirit horses still hold the important role of teacher and helper for the Anishinaabe.
We started a program way back when with an organization called Motivate Canada, and we originally got our start from there, where we were basically running after school programs to contradict the high school dropout rate, like 12, 13 years ago, Kim?
And Darcy was not really a horse person, but he was a big after school guy for sports. But I was a horse person, I always have been, and I had a couple of horses. And then as we started getting my stepkids, his kids, kind of involved with my horses, we sort of thought, wow, this would be a good thing for, you know, more kids on the reserve, right?
Football does not work for every youth, hockey or volleyball. So you have to create options there to help promote healthy lifestyles and education. So we decided to use horses. So we were running around on all these different ranches, working these programs of equine riding with horses and horseback training with different ranches. And this is where Kim and myself had this idea, well, why don't we just run a program here rather than traveling all over the place? We can have an ongoing program, a program that the kids can actually own and be directly part of.
Back since the mid-70s, right, when they took those last four that are known to exist, that were anywhere, they took them from Lac La Croix. You know this story, I'm sure, right? And they took them to the U.S. and then started breeding them, and they thought they were Mustangs. And so they bred them with a Spanish Mustang. And so now we have a breed that is homogenous. It's remained small. And they are really sweet horses, the most affectionate horses I've ever known. They're affectionate, they're loyal, they're really wonderful horses. So I think that the breed has turned out to be a breed that is really sort of focused on people, happy to work with them, and one that I hadn't known about, because I'm not from here, I'm from Northern Michigan, right? And I had never heard of them. Darcy thought they had disappeared. And when we discovered that they hadn't, kind of by chance, because we ran across a farm where there was a small population of them, we said, oh, look. Darcy had known these horses when he was a kid, but they disappeared from Seine River when you were what,
old. Yeah. I remember when I was young, it was a time that residential school was happening and they were still taking people. At that time, our community was an isolated community. So the missionaries and the RCMP would come and pick up the children at that time. But I was one of the fortunate ones, which was hidden. I was one of those, I'm an oddity still to this day, where I speak fluent Ojibwe and everything like that, and I practice my traditions. And basically, that was the last time that we had actually seen horses on Seine River community, and elders had never saw them again for another 50 years until we actually brought the herds back. It was a very special moment, let me tell you, that day when we brought that herd of horses to the powwow, and we were letting the elders know, these are your horses. And they, of course, they recognized them, right? Back in those days, the horses roamed free like the deer. You know, whenever you needed a horse, they'd just go and get one because he was just eating outside, right outside the wigwam. And, you know, it was, they were easily accessible even. So, and they had a natural relationship with the people where they didn't go far. They just basically stood close to the communities, perhaps because they felt more safe because of the animals that they had to deal with out in the wild also. So,
and more fed in the
more
winter.
Fed, so it was like a huge, elders were crying and very tearful on the day that we brought the horses back into the powwow grounds. And we told them that they're always going to be here now, because some had thought that they would never see horses again in Seine River. And our road is based on that name. It's called Horse Collar Junction Road, and named after all the horses that were here at one point. Most people associate working with horses with just riding. Right, there's riding one thing, but in actual reality there's so many things that you can do with a horse. And but the main goal that I use within the programming a lot of times is I let the horse be the teacher. The horse actually does all the teaching, would you believe that? And in a sense where he mirrors everything that you're feeling, your nervousness, your fear, your happiness, your joy, your excitement, you know, and he mirrors everything about who you are. So in order to learn to understand what a horse is going through, you know, you can hide your feelings from me, but you can't hide it from a horse. Just recently, I had a grandma and a mom bought their granddaughter over here, because she was having a problem at high school. She was one of those kinds of youth that stood in the corner but wasn't directly involved because she was feeling the peer pressure. So she felt isolated and introverted inside herself. Then they said, maybe you could help us out. And I said, sure, I got an evening for you over here. I wasn't asking anything, you know. It was, you know, mom and grandma can shovel horse poop with me while a student does this, right, you know. And so I started lunging the horse, and I taught her a little bit about lunging the horse. And this girl was very timid. She just stand there, and I can't do this, I don't know. And you can see the confidence level was really low, and there was also fear. So I told her, it's just a big dog. You know, it's like working with your dog at home. He's more scared of you than you are of him, but he's looking to you as a leader to try and see if you can give him some direction. So we'll try the lunging part. And it took about 2-3 hours in the day to actually do all of this stuff, teach her the basic safeties of leading a horse, working with the horse, saying hello to the horse, and having a general understanding of the horse. And basically, by the time she was done, within an hour, she was lunging the horse. Now I said, now we're going to try the hooking technique, where you're just basically going to ignore the horse and see how the horse comes to you, to see how well you're lunging the horse. And I taught her the basics of that and everything like that. So she did exactly that. And then when she stopped and turned around and sat, now you ignore the horse. You gave it all the attention for a good half an hour that you were lunging. Now ignore him. And this is what they call a hooking technique, and the horse comes to you. And if the horse doesn't come to you, then you haven't lunged properly. So she did it, and she did the proper lunge to the horse, right? And then the horse came and rested her after she sat around, not facing the horse. The horse came and rested the snout on her shoulder. Hey, are we done lunging it? It literally blew her away. And even grandma and mom were just like, and you see the brightness and the confidence level that was shining in her eyes after that, that she could actually do something like that. And I said, you want to try it a few more times just so you can get used to it? After a while, she looked like a pro. Okay, and she was actually coming out of herself, which was the whole idea behind this exercise, where sometimes we need to have something that an animal that we can trust, that just wants to be our friend and everything like that, which she found in the horse, and was able to allow herself that vulnerability to open up to the horse and work with the horse like that. And these kinds of things, and it teaches you that confidence because you feel good about yourself. Sometimes that's one of the most difficult things for young people at an early age, is they don't always feel good about who they are. And you need to find different healing techniques, which a horse already naturally has, and give them to you.
With the kids, it's to me, it's that you don't have that permanent judgment. And I remember that from my own high school years, right, where I was the oddball person that nobody wanted to sit with and all that, and very shy. And the horses, on the other hand, they don't make those judgments. They will see if you're angry or not angry, excited or not excited, but they don't assume it's forever necessarily, right? They just see how you are today. And what they're looking for is a leader. Horses only want one thing. They want to survive till tomorrow, right? And in order to do that, they need a calm, steady leader who can show them where's the good place to eat, you know, where's the place to drink, where can we be safe, and where can we survive till tomorrow? So if you can be the person who kind of shows them, yeah, I can lead you, I can share my confidence with you, and I will keep you safe. And strangely, while you're giving that horse kind of your strength and your confidence, it builds it in you.
We're creating a legacy here. And you get to a certain age in your life and people ask themselves, what did I do with this life? What have I contributed? What have I given back to the life that was given to me? And I keep telling the youth, you basically, to them, we're just shoveling horse poop, riding horses, playing with horses, la, 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 you know. But in actual reality, they don't realize that long after we're all gone, those horses will still be here because of the efforts that you put in. We're creating a legacy of a horse that is right on a critically endangered species. There's a horse that would become no more, a horse that's of our ancestors. And I'm not going to say we're totally in the clear, because we still need more breeders to actually be doing this all across Canada in order to bring the breed up. Most people think we lost our culture. In actual reality, we haven't. We haven't lost our culture. It's just a question of when you decide to pick that up again. And I keep telling people that culture came through visions and our connection and our understanding with nature. And once you start in that direction again, we are the ones who are lost. The grass is still green, the skies are still blue, the water still flows, and we still have the ability to be able to dream. What we carry in our lives. And I try to get that message out to all the youth. And I know in the present day right now, it's really difficult to try and live in two of the worlds that we live in, one of the modern and one of the tradition. With our traditionalism, it was quite backwards, where I live for you and you live for me, and that's the way we live. But we live in a me society a lot of times. So the horse basically becomes a teaching tool, even in that sense, where the horse is actually will do just about anything for us. It teaches us compassion. It teaches us about who we are. And these are the traditional belief systems that you learn when working with horses.
Darcy Whitecrow and Kimberly Campbell run Grey Raven Ranch in Seine River, Ontario. Hey. Hey. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Laura Bone-Stubing, Aaron Knoll, Shiloh Fagan, Rhiannon Johnson, and Kim Kasher. You can always find more on our website at cbc.ca/unreserved or download the podcast on the CBC Listen app or your favorite pod places. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Ganasnamitnawi. Egosay.